Chapter 4. The Great Oracle. A tall being stood to the westward side of the chamber, spindle-limbed but corded with wiry muscle. A demon of chaos, a lord of change. It grasped a tall staff in both hands, upon which was bound a grimoire that murmured with a voice of its own. The staff's finial was a metal fish of fearsome aspect. Of all the things about his mentor that he loathed, Efrix hated this fish the most. It grimaced and pulled faces when it thought Efrix could not see. It was, Efrix felt, the summation of his master's disdain for him. The Lord of Change had broad wings. Feathers that were blue only some of the time rippled with arcane energies upon the being's wings and thighs. Otherwise it was bald and dry-skinned. All these things were remarkable, although not so remarkable as the fact of its two avian heads. The demon leaned upon its staff and craned both heads forward on long, wrinkled necks, the headdresses of each swaying with the movement. One face was creased with benign amusement, the other with disappointment. The demon was a being of one mind. One head saw only the past, the other the future. Efrix noted with alarm that it was the future-seeing face that scowled.
The ninth disciple of the ninth tower. Have you proven unworthy at last?
Said the amused head.
8 others in this place, and time we have consumed. 8 towers we have toppled. Perhaps we should dine again,
said the other to the first. Efrix bowed so low the tips of his horns tapped the mosaic floor.
A Kairos Fate Weaver, oracle of everything, mightiest of all the lords of change, I greet you. Yes, yes,
said the amused head.
Feeble wizard bows and scrapes, but there is little loyalty beneath his horns,
said the other.
I have discovered something of great portent,
began Efrix. But Kairos would not let him finish.
Why do you, sorcerer,
said the amused head,
believe that what can be hidden from most masterful Tzeentch should be revealed to you?
Finished the annoyed one. Kairos gestured at the molten gold, causing it to bubble and spit. He stepped forward, his staff tapping on the maddening patterns of the floor like the cane of a blind man. Tap, tap, this way. Tap, tap, that way. Probing for obstacles Efrix could not perceive. Kairos stopped a few feet away from Efrix, leaned upon his staff again and peered at him with 2 pairs of hard button-black eyes. The eyes of a carrion bird, examining food not quite dead.
I have had no warning of this, said Efrix. As much as I cannot believe it, Tzeentch did not know of these lightning warriors. The mortal is so cunning.
So stupid, said the other head.
Has it not occurred to him that Tzeentch did not tell?
The pages of Kairos's book fluttered.
But he is right. Our lord is in a rage that his sight was turned elsewhere. The doings in the realm of Azir hidden from his view. So Tzeentch was blinded,
Efrix frowned.
But you, O mighty Kairos, did you know?
He asked suspiciously.
Know what, small and insignificant weaver of spells?
Asked Kairos innocently. One head rose up and peered out of the window. The beak clacked. The attention of both heads returned to the wizard.
I do not think today is for the playing of games, implored Efrix. You are given the power to see that which Tzeentch might not. You are the guarantor of his perspicacity.
Every day is a day for games,
chided the first head.
When the game stops, time will end. There is only the game, nothing else.
You knew. You did. After all I have done, you knew that this would happen. I am so close to achieving the translocation.
Efrix began to pace. Kairos's head swung heavily to follow him.
I foresaw,
said one head.
I have seen into the well of eternity, into which even Tzeentch might not glance.
I did not foresee,
said the other.
It is not for me to tell,
said the first head.
It is not for me to know,
said the second.
I can no more easily keep my mind closed to Tzeentch than you can keep your mind closed to me,
said the first head.
What makes you think I knew?
He knows only what I will tell him. And I did not tell him this, said the second.
Oh, you obfuscate, wheedled Efrix. Tell me, O master, if you are aware, it will affect our plans. My skulls are close to fully charged. I am so close to removing Chamon to the realm of chaos. Do you wish me to fail?
Yes,
said the second head.
No,
said the first.
If you will not treat with me honestly, how can I serve you?
Asked Efrix. Kairos brought out the moaning child in him. For that he would never forgive the Lord of Change.
I would have honesty, said the first head.
Truth from the Lord of Flies,
said the second.
Both heads clicked their beaks in laughter. Efrix emitted an exasperated noise and turned back to his golden mirror.
Why so irritable, wielder of small magics?
Asked Kairos amicably.
Great power, no power, useless, a master,
muttered the other head.
You know better than to expect a straight answer from me. From anything. There are no simple answers, and no simple questions that could be framed to find them, even if they were to exist, which they do not.
But exist they do,
croaked the other head.
Easy answers, easy questions. You behave as you did when you first came under my tutelage. Disappointing. Extremely so,
said the first head sorrowfully.
I must know the intent of these warriors.
Efrix went back to the gold and stared into it. He saw nothing but the gleaming yellow of the metal.
If they come here for the artifact or only for conquest.
Kairos shrugged.
The secret is done. Why can I not see them now?
None can, little wizard,
said the first head.
None but he who sent them. Great magic shroud them still.
And we do not wish to draw his attention here. Not yet. So do not break the shroud, if you can break it,
said the second head.
A thousand plans flickered through Efrix's mind, as swift and short-lived as mice. He could not scheme against the unknown.
I must know their purpose.
Kairos stepped forward. He was so huge that two steps carried him across the chamber, his wings scraping the stonework of the ceiling. The demon prodded Efrix with a talon that was long and slate-grey, and as hard as slate, too. It hurt Efrix's chest.
Think, little wizard. This is no great war party, but a scouting group. Foresight has made your mind lazy and dull. If you do not know, then extrapolate.
Ruminate,
said the second head.
Think! If you cannot, you are not fitting to serve our master,
said the first head.
You are not fit to serve me!
So, the question is,
said the second head.
What have they come to scout?
Said the first.
That is not the question I had in mind,
said the second head.
It will stand,
said the first.
Efrix looked at the floor. His mind penetrated the fabric of the tower. He looked all the way down, 1,000 feet to the lead cairn where his prize was entombed. Within that, he did not look. The sight would blind him.
How could they know about the hammer? Zinch hid it and removed knowledge of it from all the realms.
Kairos looked at his pupil expectantly. Two pairs of beady eyes glittered with the light of dead stars.
Yes,
he said encouragingly.
They don't know, do they?
Asked Efrix excitedly.
They don't know at all.
He pointed a finger at Kairos.
That's why you've come. To make sure they don't find out.
Clever,
said the first head.
Somewhat,
said the second.
And then it begs the question, what are they here for?
How long have you been master of this vale?
Asked Kairos.
A long time, said Efrix.
And?
Prompted the other head.
I have never found the Silver Road, the great realm gate of the Duadin. Is that what they seek? I had a vision of a realm gate in Akshi.
War has erupted across many of the mortal realms. The powers are in uproar. Everywhere the man-god strikes,
said Kairos.
The Silver Way leads everywhere.
It would be of great use to them.
Dismay clouded Efrix's features again.
And they will search the valley. When they find it, they will come in great numbers and throw up fortresses of their own. Anvrok will become a marshalling yard for the wars of Azir. They will surely be drawn to this fortress, and sooner rather than later. I cannot hide what I have, and I am so close.
Why now?
He demanded angrily.
Why am I to be tested so by the great changer when I am about to deliver him this prize?
Efrix delivers Zinch's prize?
Asked the first head to the second.
Not correct. We both,
said the second. Both nodded, then peered at the sorcerer.
Our prize,
they said together.
Our plan, our reward. This is news to us all, the work of a rival power. Sigma, of the world gone before.
Kairos's eyes closed, and his necks extended upward, head shaking sinuously back and forth.
The godling believes he can oppose chaos. Defy that which has already been victorious,
said the first head.
His plans he hid, but his assaults he cannot. He will be challenged soon.
I need more time,
snarled Efrix.
99 more dawns are required to charge the fortress sufficiently to convey it through the Shard Gate,
warned Kairos.
Only then will the Metal Realm be ours to dispose of as we see fit. They cannot stop the Stormcast Eternals,
added the second.
That is the name of Sigmar's puppets?
Asked the first.
It is,
said the second.
What if,
said Efrix. He rubbed his chin and paced the floor.
What if it is not more time that I need, but more magic?
A thought,
said Kairos.
But is it a good one?
Asked the other head.
When the warriors of Sigmar were slain in Akshi, he ascended on reversed lightning,
said Efrix. His mind was racing.
They are not men, these creatures. They are infused with magic.
Good, good,
said Kairos.
Little wizard thinks well. And what is your conclusion?
I can trap their essence. Use the power of Sigmar against him. With the power of the storm mine to command,
Efrix spread his fingers quickly.
It is done!
He chuckled, a gurgling growl like that made of a frightened cat.
Oh, most delicious irony! Sigmar seeks to take Jamon, but I will use his own weapons to take it from him! Your own warriors are not enough to stand against them. When they discover the nature of this fortress, they will come against you in great numbers,
said Kairos.
Your magic is modest, and your army weak.
You are right, of course, said Efrix. But I will have support, and the location of the Silver Road will buy it. I will call upon Lord Myrak and King Thrond. Their armies will keep these warriors at bay. They are bored and desirous of new lands to conquer. The Silver Road offers them an infinity of nations to despoil. It does not matter if they win or lose, so long as they buy the time we need with their blood.
500 years it took for chaos to subjugate this realm.
Sigmar will not win it back in a day. When they come against me, these Stormcast Eternals?
He asked. Kairos nodded.
They will be weakened. No threat. I will siphon off their magic and complete my... our plan.
You are learning, mortal,
said Kairos's first head.
Fool,
said the second.
Agreed,
said the first.
But the fool learns.
Efrix opened his mouth to protest, but the greater demon was suddenly gone, leaving nothing but a solitary blue feather drifting to the floor, and a harsh, citocine smell. The sorcerer waited a moment. He shut his eyes and opened his mind. Through its weirding sight, he appraised the room, seeking any trace of the Lord of Change. This allowed him to see the world as it truly was, a warping, dancing confection of magical flame, bound by natural law into the shapes of matter and energy. But those laws had no jurisdiction over him, and such shapes he could easily unpick. Kairos had gone, off to bother another unfortunate on some other plane of reality. Efrix grinned to himself. He was no slave.
Kairos grossly underestimated him. He walked towards the wall. A door rippled into existence, and he stepped through onto a delicate balcony that leapt into being in time to catch his footfalls. He looked out towards the valley where the foe gathered. Efrix had told the demon he would hold off the storm warriors until they were weakened, but he would do exactly the opposite. If he could lure the stormcasts to his fort sooner rather than later, the prize he sought to bring before Tzeentch would be his alone to deliver. Let them bring their full strength against him, all the more magic for him to steal. The realm of Chamon would become a part of the realm of chaos forever, and he its undisputed king. There was no need to be modest, thought Efrix. He was exceedingly clever. He looked across all of Anvrok, Cantroc, and Denvrok below. All of this, the Sundered Lands, the Serpents, Argentine, and Vitrix, the Crucible, he would bring before Tzeentch, a gift fit for a god. Then he would be elevated beyond the petty bounds of mortality, made a demon himself, a gift worthy for one such as he. Tzeentch would have a new favorite, and Kairos would find out just how weak Efrix really was. His fists clenched. The demon showed him no respect, and for that it would suffer. Always it mocked him, prodded at him, its bored jibes threatening to turn to outright sadism. Yes, Efrix had had quite enough of Kairos the Oracle, and he had a plan to humble him. First, he must call upon his own allies. He lifted one hand to his face and blew upon it. He uncurled his fingers. Upon his palm stood a perfect replica of Kairos, 4 inches tall. In this replica, the eyes of only one head glinted with intelligence. The other head lolled, an idiot expression plastered across its face.
"Thing," said Efrix, naming the being.
"Wise Efrix,"
Thing said.
"Why must I wear this form?"
"Because it amuses me," said Efrix.
"It will amuse you no longer when the Lord Kairos sees how you mock him."
"I enjoy a little thrill," said the sorcerer.
"You are to fly to Lord Myrak of Manticoria. Bid him come here with all haste and all his host. Inform King Thrond of the Crucible to make ready. Tell him of the situation."
"Which is?"
asked the demon. Efrix growled dangerously. Thing held up borrowed hands.
"Begging your forgiveness, if you let me free of my prison once in a while, Lord, then I might know. But Thing has no freedom that is not decreed by his most gracious Efrix, and I see nothing in my jar. Nothing."
Thing clapped his hands over his face. His second head stared on stupidly.
"Oh, stop your wailing, Thing."
Thing peeked through his fingers.
"I must trouble you to explain."
So the sorcerer explained. His dream, the arrival of the Stormcast Eternals, the problem of 99 days, although not the exact problem, not the real problem, but some fiction Thing could betray to Myrak and Thrond.
"I see. Is there more I can do for the Great Master?"
said Thing impertinently.
"Perhaps to fetch for him refreshment? Or a pretty potted fern? This chamber of yours is austere. It lacks a homely touch."
"Now it is you that mocks me, imp. And unlike Kairos, I am fully aware of your insolence."
Fires sprang up from Efrix's hand around the demonling.
"Very well, very well,"
Thing squealed.
"Sorry, so sorry."
Efrix snorted. The flames went out. Thing's idiot head croaked.
"Fly, Thing, and if you are swift, perhaps I might allow you an hour free from your jar."
The imp nodded eagerly.
"I am away, away."
It spread its wings, the perfect imitations of Kairos's own, and took flight.
"Ow!"
chirruped Thing, as its unwanted second head pecked at him.
"Stop that."
It veered sideways in flight as he slapped at it.
"Away, Thing, swiftly. There is no reward for tardiness,"
called Efrix. Thing leveled out and flapped up and away, borne quickly on winds that blew through no earthly air.
A new game begins, said Efrix as he watched Thing ascend.
He bit his lip with his needle teeth, bringing forth a bright jewel of coppery blood. He licked it away reflexively and chortled to himself, then went to gather his followers. Time to provoke a reaction from the invaders. Time to lure them in.